Blog Talk Radio.
Again, nothing to do at all. I'm really, really bored. This is rough.
Yeah, I feel you.
I'm telling you, this is rough. Well, yet another week two of the Two Guys Soccer Show without soccer. I don't know about you, dear listeners, but, you know, I've been trying to fill up the void. It's been an interesting proposition. I talked to my sister today. Found out I had a niece and a nephew. I knew they existed. I didn't realize they had a personality. It's weird how many people you get to know. I've been trying to fill my time by doing play-by-play on my walks. I think I'm starting to scare people. It's kind of like that scene from Brockmire when he shows up in Morristown for the first time and starts narrating what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether people find me quaint and quirky or just really, really weird. And social distancing doesn't help because everybody just walks in an opposite direction every time you walk towards them. But such is the nature of the time that we're living in. So, I'm Mike. I'm joined by my ever-present co-host, Armstead. How you doing?
Hanging in there, man. Doing all right. Slowly realizing that daycare is worth every penny that you have to spend. It's worth it. That's my anecdote for the day. Daycare is worth it. Love my kids, but wow, daycare's worth it.
It's that old adage, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many times I can pretend to be various characters from my son's favorite television shows, and he was quite upset with me today because I was confusing a character from Blaze with a character from Mighty Pups Paw Patrols. So I have to make sure I keep up with my Paw Patrols Mighty Pups knowledge as to keep the games going, to keep him to keep the game moving, because the last thing I want to do is not present my character effectively, as I consider myself to be somewhat of a extraordinarily amateur thespian. My skills in maintaining my character have been lacking as of late, so got to work on that.
So, yeah, I'm here.
No, sorry.
And we are brought to you as, so I feel for you, brother.
Thank you, my friend.
We are brought to you, as always, by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordero Avenue. Bethesda Marrow's premier Irish takeout bar. And the home of Irish Steve. If you go on their website, they put out, Marcus, who we talked to last week, helped them put out a new line of t-shirts. They're quite funny. Irish Steve's take on COVID-19. Check them out. But I don't know. I don't know what to do. I found myself trying to watch replays of great games, mm-hmm. and we'll get into that a little bit later on. And highlights. Just remember, what it was like.
Yeah. I found myself watching the marble races on YouTube. Found them extraordinarily entertaining. Extraordinarily entertaining. Marble racing, that's the new thing that seems to be catching on right now.
So, we were supposed to have London Sean on today to give us the take on the coronavirus from the UK, but I'm not sure that's going to work because we're still having some connectivity issues. It's hard to place a call internationally during COVID-19. Apparently, even the phone lines. It's kind of interesting, though. I was, just in case, I was reading through some of the transfer rumors, as I'm wanting to do. It appears at least the business of soccer continues, even if the games don't. Today, Cavani possibly signing for Boca Juniors. Manchester United being linked with everybody under the sun.
Of course.
Real Madrid either has a ton of money to spend or they have no money at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yet another takeover bid, which I swore was the same last takeover bid for Newcastle United. Juve willing to include Aaron Ramsey and Paul Pogba deal. That makes no sense to me. Why would Manchester United, who are trying to sign Saul from Atletico Madrid, want Aaron Ramsey?
Yeah. His best years are long behind him. Guy that I really love, always have, but it's no secret that, you know, he's on the other end of his career.
Mm-hmm. Ajax canceled Klaas-Jan Huntelaar's contract. I thought he had retired. I didn't know that he actually still had a contract. That shows you how much I paid you. Pay attention to that. Liverpool have no interest in Philippe Coutinho return. Wonder why.
Yeah.
And yet again, if they can't sign Sadio Mane, Real Madrid will go after Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Mm.
Nice to know that at least the rumor mill stays employed.
Still going, yep.
But an interesting article, though, that I was reading discussed the fact that the Premier League could lose up to $1 billion
yep.
if the season is called early. And with the, like, and the Economist who wrote it, I mean, it's a think piece. You can call it clickbait if you want. We know that there's going to be a certain amount of, like, sponsors and TV contracts aren't being paid if there's no games being played, right? You know, it's not guaranteed money. Sports isn't dropping $3 billion for 33% of the season, or
nope.
66% of the season. It's just not happening, right?
Nope.
You know, and if you haven't learned what force majeure is in a contract, look it up, because that's why that language is in there, for just these sorts of things. And the interesting takeaway from the piece that I read was the Economist, I believe it appeared in the Liverpool Echo, said that without the Premier League television revenue, these Premier League teams aren't any better off than your League One and Championship teams,
mm-hmm.
as far as money. And some of those lower league teams who have been counting on that money for their wage bills could be forced into a position where they need to basically terminate contracts.
Right. Yeah, you're looking at a situation where we could see lots of teams like Bury coming up in the next season or two.
I have always predicted that we're going to see a shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we're going to see a seismic shift. I think the transfer market's going to be radically changed because teams just aren't going to have the same amount of money.
Mm.
We're looking at Juve and Barca and Real Madrid saying, basically, we don't have the funds to pay these contracts through the remainder of the season if the games aren't
right.
being played. You're going to see I don't see right now if the season doesn't end, and even if it does, I don't know that England is going to have enough viable professional teams to fill all 96 slots in the top four divisions next year.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't, not saying what's going on in these lower leagues like Scotland, like will the Scottish Premier League, will those teams even have the money left this season to restart the season?
Right.
What if they're given the go-ahead? You know, how tight finances are there. And if they did, would they have to take some sort of loan out against the upcoming one, like the knock-on effect of that? I think we're going to see a shift in professional football in Europe when this is done.
Yeah, I don't see how you cannot. Because regardless of if they were able to play again, the losses that they're going to that they're occurring are still going to be quite palpable. Because even if they're able to open up again and they're able to have games, there's no way you can count on the attendance to be remotely close to what it was previously. And then number two, what you're saying too is, you can't even guarantee that the renewed contracts that they're going to seek are going to be able to command the same money, because everything is going to recess. It's inevitable. Everything is going to fall back. So I think I know you mentioned this on our text group, and I think you mentioned this last week. You know, transfer budgets are going to go down, and I think players have to be mindful that the wages you were able to command, and the teams are going to have to be mindful of the transfers you were able to make, aren't going to be the same. I would suspect you're going to see probably less movement, especially amongst the bigger teams, where you're going to see players saying, "No, I'm good. I want to stick with this particular set of circumstances I have here," as opposed to risk kind of playing the field and end up being in a worse position than you were before. I think it may be wise for players to just say, you know what, I'm okay. We're going to work this one out here.
What clubs do you think are in the best position to move forward after the shutdown is over?
Yeah, you know what's kind of funny? I'm going to say Manchester City and PSG, because unless UEFA decides to take its focus back to those two particular teams, they're going to have to pool their resources into recovering from this. They're going to have to pool their resources into making sure the Euro goes off without a hitch next year, 2021. And then you also only have a one-year gap between the Euro and the World Cup. So you could see some of the pressure that's on Manchester City and PSG start to wane a little bit. And I know that some reports I've read that Arsenal were the ones kind of beating the drum for this penalty to remain with Manchester City. But I haven't seen too much about this topic recently. I know they're just trying to kind of save the league. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of nice to have a bunch of noise being made somewhere else to take the focus off of. I think that those particular teams that have kind of resources that aren't solely based in the revenue that can be generated by the club are going to be better off. So I'm imagining teams that have wealthy owners that are not based in Western Europe or North America. I think those teams are going to be better set to be able to advance properly moving forward. That's what my gut's telling me. I could be dead wrong, and I hope I am. But that's kind of where I'm leaning right now, just because I just feel like I've seen this before. And it's almost like if you have guys that can just kind of stash some money away, they're more likely to be able to bounce back more effectively. So we'll kind of see what comes out after that. But teams that depend on that TV money, that depend on that, that are kind of like, I'm thinking of teams like Arsenal, that are big clubs, but they're not of the, you know, they're not a top five club when it comes, or I would say a top 10 club when it comes to that type of revenue, are going to struggle. I mean, Spurs are going to struggle. So that's what I see going forward. I hope I'm wrong, though.
I would initially say the same thing, PSG and Man City. Depending on what happens, I still feel like Man City is going to serve a Champions League ban. For how long remains to be seen. And it may not even be next year. It could be 2022, right? But have you seen the price of oil recently?
Yeah, that's true. You're right about that, because that's tanking right now because nobody's going anywhere.
Well, that and with the Russians and stuff, like oil closed at around $20 today. That's taken billions out of Aramco and out of that oil money. Now,
Oil prices are like at a 20-year low. For oil prices, I mean, I remember back when, like, when we were in college, where, you know, you can get gas for like 80 cents, 90 cents, $1, $1.05. You know, that's what we're looking at here. It could be tumbling down to those types of levels.
Yeah, and that's going to be rough on the gas. Gas stations, because at that price they don't make any money.
No, and that's also going to be rough on teams that depend on that money, which is those teams that are. That's a good point. That's a really good point. I didn't think about that.
But you know, I know that Abu Dhabi and Dubai and the Emirates all have different investment arms, but you know, a lot of that money is still tied up in oil revenue, right?
Right.
So that could be costly.
Yeah. That's going to be harder to hide, too. It's going to be harder to kind of prove that you have the revenue when you don't. You know, when you have money somewhere else, it's going to be a bit more difficult to cook the books in that way. Yeah. That's a good point.
I wonder how well placed a team like Man United are, right? Because we've talked about their turnover. Bayern Munich, talk about their turnover. You know, the finances of Real Madrid and Barcelona are always weird. Like, you feel like they should have more money than they actually really ever seem to do.
Right.
And
Go ahead. I
question whether, you know, who's going to be able to afford these $100 million transfers plus the wages. And I liken this to, like, you know, Paul Pogba, who obviously has expressed his desire to leave. Man United are sitting there talking about, well, they want $100 million. They seem more than willing to pay the, you know, the prices that I've heard just for the two midfield, the two, Jadon Sancho and Saul would top out at about a quarter of a billion pounds, right?
Right.
We're looking at around $1.18 for Sancho and $1.35 for Saul. Now, of course, that's not going to be an upfront type of thing. At least I don't think so, because I don't think $1.35 is the buyout for Saul. It'll probably be, you know, an upfront prorated over the course of 4 years, right? So that they might be able to afford that based on their revenue. But who else outside of a team like that is going to be able to afford to pay these sorts of fees? Are those fees going to be realistic?
You know, you're going to see teams also who are going to be really concerned about having another Neymar situation where, you know, PSG basically broke the bank to sign him for, you know, what was it, $222 million, something ridiculous like that. So there's going to be even less teams, though, that are going to be able to afford half of that for a transfer budget. So, I mean, is this going to lead to where you have more leagues in Europe which have a Germany or an Italy situation where there is one dominant team and everybody else is basically playing for second and who can occasionally maybe sneak in and win a league, you know, where you have, let's say you have a Manchester United in England, you know, as we all know about PSG in France, you have Bayern Munich, you have Juve down in Italy. So is it going to be that type of thing where that becomes a situation in more leagues? Because I don't think that's good for football. And that could go to what also you've expressed, where there may be a situation where it becomes they just have their European-based 20-team league. I don't, you know, it could, you know, you could see it ending up in that way, ending up that way.
Well, that was my next thing. Is it possible that we could find ourselves in a situation where, all right, so we restart the season, played behind closed doors in June and July, push back the start of next season. But could we be in a situation where in order for European soccer, for club soccer, for UEFA to survive, they need to get the revenue from a 20-team European Super League for next year. And just for 1 year, we're going to do that. But if they did it, would it be just for 1 year? Like, could you see something like that being drawing enough revenue that could be divided up amongst the because you've got to imagine, what's the Premier League contract worth? About what, a couple billion a season?
I think it's
what,
$4 billion. I think it's four billion. Yeah.
What would a plus the Champions League, which is worth about another, would a European Super League featuring Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Barcelona, the big names, with a 20-team European Super League, would that contract be could you get $10 billion for that?
Yeah. I think you could, because I think the contracts you would get from the intrigue of that would just be too great. And you would have, I could see state-run or any sort of independently run large networks in various countries throughout the world who will want access to those rights. And so you could see them having, let's say Australia comes in with 500,000 or 500 million, and then you see United States has, theirs is 2 billion. And then the various European leagues, European countries are going to want some of that because the advertising dollars would just be way too great to pass up. I could totally see that. And, you know, you would see Japan want a piece. You're going to see China wanting to air those games. So you'll see a lot of money just to have access to televised from stations throughout the world. I think they could. I think the scary part, though, is that are you going to be able to – I think the scary part is not should you do it. It's could you only do it for one season, or would that become the new thing? Because that would be – I won't lie. Thinking of a 38-game season of those teams, I mean, I would pay for it. If you told me I had to pay $300 to air every one of those games, I would pay for it. I would.
Yeah, I mean, you would be seeing the creme de la creme week in, week out.
Imagine this podcast. We'd have to go to 3 hours, Mike. We'd have to go twice a week for two or four.
We'd have to go twice a week.
Yeah, we would. I mean, that would be unbelievable if you had that type of a league. And you named like six teams, that's it. You know, you get Porto in there or Benfica, and you get Juve, and you get Milan, and like, and you could just, you don't even need to worry about the recent league standings. You could just go for the sexy teams. Who cares where they finish? That's who you want.
Yeah,
you want one with that history.
But if it's just one,
he's holding.
And I've got Coach G on the line, I believe. Coach G, you there?
Yes, sir. What's going on, gentlemen?
Not much. We're talking about the possibility of a one-year European Super League as a potential savior.
Yeah,
I kind of
heard the tail end of it, and I kind of have to agree. Every time they do like the UEFA Champions, every time they do like the draws, I'm always kind of hoping to see teams that haven't played with each other or played against each other in a very long time. And I'm hoping that next time they draw the teams, you know, these two fantastic teams will go against each other. So I think that Super League will actually be kind of cool to see these teams that we normally never or hardly ever see play against each other, maybe play on a regular year in or maybe every 2 years kind of tournament or kind of league kind of thing. If you guys talk about every year kind of thing. But it would be kind of cool. It would be kind of cool to see Man U versus Byron every year or every other year, like guaranteed. Or Juve versus Arsenal every year or something like that. That would be kind of cool to see. Like, again, we might see that every 5 years, 10 years kind of thing. But to see it every year, it would be kind of cool.
It would be – I mean, I guess the teams would be – we could put it together. Like you said, Porto.
Yeah.
You'd have to throw Ajax in there.
Yeah.
Inter, Juve, AC Milan.
Yeah.
Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. You know, maybe even a Celtic or something like that.
Right.
Or a Galatasaray or a Fenerbahce.
Right. Yep.
You know, kind of just to
and
spread.
Maybe
well.
Olympiacos could get thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you did,
I know I don't want them.
Even if you did a 22 team league as a one-off, could that be the potential? And with the agreement, like, you know, I don't know, 50% of the revenue goes to UEFA and then gets distributed amongst the major amongst the federations.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about $10 billion in revenue, that would still guarantee the teams that were playing like a $4 or $5 billion pot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Mike, too? I think $10 billion may even be like – it might be something like $12 or $15 billion.
I think once you got all the – because when I quoted $10 billion, I was wondering just for the European rights.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about the additional – $5 or $6 billion that could be made. And then if you really wanted to spice it up, you could play the games in other locations, although I don't think that's going to happen because I can't see them traveling to New York to play on one Saturday and then
a
5-hour flight back. Not that they don't do it.
Well, you know what though? If there isn't a Champions League and they're just playing one game a week, that's doable.
Mm-hmm.
If you let them still compete in the domestic cup tournaments.
Yeah.
That might be to keep viability of those around.
Yeah.
But I mean,
Man City's got to win their trophy anyway. So.
I
don't know. That's intriguing though. That's really intriguing.
It's an interesting thought. So G, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing today on this lovely Monday?
You know, I handicapped the squirrel race today.
Ooh. And who won? Was it the old dark guy or was it the short leg squirrel?
No.
What are we talking about here?
Up here in the D.C. area, Stead is familiar with this. We actually have both black and gray squirrels.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And
right
so the it was a black squirrel and three gray squirrels. Of course, the black squirrel won.
Of course.
Hey, when you got the genes and you're faster than everyone else, you got to win something.
Yes. So before I get into the topic du jour for the roundtable, and we'll be joined by Los hopefully in a couple of minutes and possibly even Coach Matt. I want to give a big shout-out to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier Irish takeout venue at the current time. Go down, get the daily Irish special for dinner, and you can get a growler to go. Pick up a T-shirt. They have a great new line. Irish Steve tells COVID, bark off. I had to buy that one instead.
Yeah, it sounds very Irish Steve, you know. That's him to a core, I bet.
Oh, yes. The other one says, Irish Steve says social distancing, and then it's got an arrow that says 6 feet, me, landlord. They're pretty good. So take a look at those. Those are available on the through Facebook, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle. All right. So, G.
Yes, sir.
I'll give you the first crack at this. As we were talking and coming up with ideas to talk about and reminiscing, I got thinking about the most memorable games that I said, and I sent that out to all that I've seen, and I sent that out to all of you. It doesn't have to be the best game. It can be at any level, any competition. The one that will stick with you the most.
And I actually have six games. One of them, I'm going to talk about probably 5 seconds worth. That's why I only have that. Actually, I'll talk about it right now. It's a Liverpool-Watford game this year. I've never seen a team go this far into the season undefeated, and it's only a matter of time when they actually lost. So definitely a quick little easy game to talk about. But a lot of my older ones are the Italian national teams. But my fifth one actually was my first time coaching up in Chicagoland at the Pepsi Showdown Challenge. It was at Toyota Park where the Chicago Fire played and everything. So it was my first year as a assistant coach, and it was just good to see the boys work hard in the preseason, work hard in the entire year up to that tournament, and we made it to the finals. So I was actually on the pitch, kicking the ball around with the boys, scoring goals, doing cross-field passes. It was just a real cool experience. And luckily, one of our weird little kids shot about a 40-45-yarder, just a Hail Mary shot, see what kind of happens, and then it actually went in, and we actually won 1-0. So for me, it was the experience to see the boys at the younger generation coming up, and just the love and the drive of the next generation to coach the next generation. So it was kind of good to see that the youth is alive with soccer in this country, and especially in Chicago. It's my first year coaching. So that one always sticks out and will always stick out for me as a coach. So how do you want to do this? You want to do all five at one time? You want to kind of do a round table? We all do one at a time? Or what kind
let's
of direction
do
you want to do?
Let's do everybody's fifth. That way everybody gets to chime in. I know I got Coach Matt on the line. Coach, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
I can hear you just fine.
What's going on, man?
How are you?
Oh, sorry.
How are you surviving?
I'm doing this for my car.
No worries. It happens to the best of us. How are you surviving this time with no sports?
It's been terrible. It's just been really hard, not going to lie. Even, like, the podcast I listen to, like, I listen to not always just listen to soccer podcasts, but, like, also, you know, just general sports ones like Bill Simmons and stuff like that. They're just all talking just past events and reliving games, kind of like what we're doing tonight. It's just been really tough. Content-wise, I mean, obviously playing a little bit more video games, getting work done, doing video editing, everything I can to kind of pass the time by.
All right. So give us your fifth most memorable game.
I'm sorry? You cut out there.
Give us your fifth most memorable game that you have seen happen in real time.
My fifth most memorable game, for personally, was probably the Keane Vieira tunnel showdown. I watched that whole game live. It was one of the early games that I, you know, was able to watch for United when I was growing up. United wasn't actually doing that great that year. Chelsea was kind of running away with the league and stuff, but it was still kind of a crazy game because we were hot off the Arsenal-United rivalry for the title. And, you know, obviously you had the whole bust up with Keane and Vieira, and just that game was crazy. Silvestre got sent off, yet United still ended up winning 4-2. John O'Shea with the icing on the cake with the little chip from a beautiful ball from Scholesy. That's my fifth game right there.
All right. Los, how you doing this evening?
Yo. What's up? Hello.
Not much.
What's going on?
Hello.
You still surviving?
Surviving. Possibly thriving. Just today was kind of interesting. The online platform for my school was supposed to go up. And I got in at 6 a.m., put all my stuff on there so all the kids could get it. And by 8:30, it crashed. So I'm like, okay.
Crazy,
that's
right?
Good to know. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Coach G knows about it because we're in the same area.
The platform is awful. It's been crashing all day. This is definitely interesting.
Apparently,
yeah,
mine's taking off tomorrow. We'll see how that happens.
Stable. So, before I give you one of my five games, by the way, mine are in no particular order. Actually, I'm going chronological with mine.
All right,
but, before I do that, I wanted to say you guys are talking about this potential Super League, UEFA Super League, and I was thinking they could even have like a borrow from a TV show from the past and come up with their own motto, faster than Cristiano Ronaldo, more powerful than a direct free kick wall, able to leap nutmeg defenders in a single bound. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's UEFA Super League.
You see, I hope somebody in Switzerland is listening to us because we have come up with a good idea. Not only have we given you the format for it, we've also given you a tagline.
Exactly.
Can we copyright this stuff? We'll do a poor man's copyright.
Probably not.
We've got to show
I'm kind of borrowing from someone else. So, anyway.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And if you get caught cheating, you ain't trying hard enough.
Man City.
Okay.
Yeah, I was waiting.
Houston.
All right, Los, give us your first game.
My first game, yeah. This goes back to when I was first dabbling in as watching soccer as a young teenager. 1978 World Cup final, Argentina versus Holland. 3-1 was the final. 1-1 after regulation. We were watching this. We had to go pay-per-view, not just pay-per-view, but you had to watch it at a particular venue. You couldn't get it anywhere else. So we went to this place called the Tampa Hialeah Fronton, where they played Hialeah normally, but to that particular day they had World Cup soccer on display. So we were watching this. And end of regulation is 1-1, and we're watching in extra time, and it just started going in extra time, and all of a sudden, boom, video signal goes out. You can still hear it. I mean, you got Mario Machado announcing. One of my favorite announcers, by the way, of all time is Mario Machado. I always loved listening to him call any game because he could always make it sound like it was the most exciting game ever being played. We were listening. We could hear the audio signal. No video signal, and we heard Argentina scored their next two goals, and the whole Fronton was like, oh, man. And I don't know if they were upset that Argentina scored and the Netherlands ended up losing, or the fact that we weren't able to see them, which is why I went, because I couldn't see it. The signal came back on for the end of the match. They had the trophy presentation, and I'm like, this is almost like a little letdown. And then they put up a thing on the screen that says, good night, everyone, except Tampa. And I'm like, oh, what are they going to do? And they went ahead and showed the entire overtime period, even the part we had already seen. They showed the entire overtime period for us. That to me, that was memorable. That was, I think what gave me goosebumps mostly was when the players first came out on the field, the entire crowd threw confetti, huge wads of paper and all this all over the place, ended up on the field. They couldn't clean it all. So you watch the highlights of the 78 World Cup final, there's all this paper on the field, and people are like, why is there paper on the field? Because the fans went absolutely ape when the team walked on the field. It was snow. It looked like frickin' snow when you watched that when you watched them coming on the field. It was amazing. Gave me goosebumps. Gives me goosebumps thinking about it right now. It was an amazing sight. That's my first game.
Stead, give me yours.
All right, I'm going to go a different tune here. I had a coaching experience game that was probably a little too similar to Coach D, so I'm not going to throw that in there as an assistant coach for the team that wins 1-0 by a kid kicking the ball over somebody's head. So I'm going to go a different tune here. I'm going to go with April 6th, 1996, after the euphoria of the World Cup in 94, when this is actually the first time there was a fully televised on regular old TV that people watch unlimited amounts of international soccer games. We had our first MLS game of San Jose Clash against the DC United in San Jose. And I remember I was really excited to watch this game. I was a senior in high school and I was sitting down and I was ready to go. It's like, great, we're going to watch our American players play. And I'd say kickoff happened. And about 10 seconds later, I said, wow, this is really bad. One thing I noticed right off the bat was as soon as kickoff happened, the strikers on I'm pretty sure DC had kickoff, and the strikers on San Jose immediately started chasing after every loose ball that was passed around in the opposing team's defensive third. And it looked like a high school game that I had just finished playing the season before. And I was shocked.
Still is.
I was shocked. I remember sitting there going, wow, did they not watch the World Cup that happened 2 years ago? This is not how you play this game. This game doesn't work. And then San Jose won 1-0 off of a penalty kick scored by Eric Winalda. And he celebrated like I was embarrassed. I was a little embarrassed. I told all my friends who didn't like soccer to watch it. I was like, no, you're going to see. We know how to play soccer. And I did not watch another game until MLS final, because DC United was in it, and me having lots of family ties from DC, I felt compelled to watch it. And that was probably my most memorable. That was the first game that popped into my head when I said, what game do I really remember? I was like, yeah, that was bad. Like, they were really bad. And I say, anybody who talks about MLS now, you need to go back and watch that game. Go back and watch that game. 22 years later. It is 24 years later now. It is totally different. Trust me. When you watch MLS, go watch that game, and then you'll have a little bit more appreciation for what we're seeing now from our domestic league.
All right. I'm going to start with a World Cup group stage game from this last World Cup. June 15th, 2018. Spain 3, Portugal 3. And the reason why this is memorable was because I went down to Harp to watch the game, and I got my customary seat, and all these people start walking in. And this bald guy sits down at the edge of the long table that we sit back, and we start talking, and he's there with a group of friends, and he and I get to talking, and this guy's relatively interesting. And we start having really, really interesting conversations. From that, that's why we have a podcast. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was the first time that I met Armstead. Now, the game itself was one of the better group stage games, and I remember Cristiano Ronaldo gets the early penalty in the 4th minute. He scores again, and then Spain starts to come back. Costa's got the one in the 24th. Cristiano Ronaldo, it just went back and forth. A 3-2 lead. They scored 2 goals in 3 minutes. Diego Costa in the 55th. And Nacho gets one on what I recall was a pretty well-taken shot from Nacho.
Mm-hmm.
Not the type that I'm used to from a right back. Like, it was a pretty good goal from Nacho, as I remember. And I remember by this point in time, Stead and I have become pretty good, and we're enjoying it. The 88th minute, there's a free kick. Ronaldo steps up to take it, and I say to Stead, he's going to score. We knew he was going to score. Everybody in the stadium knew he was going to score. Everybody in the bar knew he was going to score. Everybody watching knew he was going to score. Everybody knew he was going to score. Everybody on Spain knew that he was going to score. And he proceeded to absolutely roof it past David De Gea. And I got to say, it's still the fact that we got the podcast out of it. Was one thing, but it was still one of the most entertaining group stage World Cup games, because typically those aren't that great.
Mm-hmm.
This one was well played. It was compelling. It was as good a 3-3 draw full stop as I can remember. And just it was a lot of fun. So that was my number 5. I'm going to switch up the order a little bit. Matt, can you give us your fourth one?
Man, this feels like it's... It feels like it's goldfish a little bit. Like, oh, please don't say my game that I want to talk about real quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to cross my fingers.
Like,
please don't say
this
game.
Don't say my game. Don't say my game.
Don't say my game.
Look, I'm, like, right, I'm next. Like, I'm going to change up the order. Like, no, I got a good one right now. But yeah, change up the order.
All right, Matt, you're up.
All right, mine's actually my fourth one is interesting. It's like from my first coaching stint with Iona, and it's like actually it was a loss in the semifinals of the conference playoffs. And the reason why it's my in my top five is just because it was just such a big learning experience for me. We lost 2-1. We were by far that year we were the best team in the conference. And it was just one of those things where as a coach, you just realize, you know, you're not always going to, you know, not always going to win, obviously. And you have to kind of learn how to accept defeat. And I kind of never will forget, just some of the seniors, like in the locker room, just like crying. And I'm a young assistant coach, you know, these kids are close to my age at the time. And, and just having to kind of experience, you know, what they were going through and some of them realizing, you know, hoping that, you know, they can continue their careers. Other than you can just look into their eyes and you just recognize, like, this is it for them. And it just, like, kind of just – it brought such a, like, a human aspect to the game for me. And I just, like, kind of took that with me as I continued my, you know, development as a coach. Yeah, it was just a – really wasn't that big – crazy of a game. It was 2-1. They went up 2 goals early. It was freezing cold for whatever reason, and the balls that the conference chose were just god awful. They were like rocks, and I know that sounds like an excuse, but it was crazy. They affected everybody's game, and it ended up being we were like a smaller technical side, and Manhattan at the time were just it was Loyola actually. They were just more of a hoofball team, and it really helped. They got a couple of set plays, and yeah, it was sad, but it'll always be one of the top games for me because it had such an impact on me as a coach.
All right.
Right on.
Right on. Los, I know you're going in chronological order, so it probably won't take G's game.
No, correct. It probably won't. No. No, I'm going to go back to 1980. Actually, 1980 is kind of a launching point into 1981.
Did I just hear G go yes?
You did.
Go for it, Los.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first off, one of the best all-time players and the all-time leading scorer in the North American Soccer League is Giorgio Canaglia. I met him back in 1980. He got us into a closed soccer practice for the Cosmos. It was closed, but he got us in, stepped off the bus, told security, these are my friends, let them in. He'd never met us before. And he got us into the practice. And so we watched as they were all practicing. Beckenbauer was there. Johan Neeskens was doing his own thing, kind of like a conditioning thing. He was running laps around the field. That's all he did. And he was running at a slow pace. Canaglia was taking shots from the top of the 18 and putting them in the back of the net. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. This is great. So after the practice, I asked Canaglia if there's a way I could get his jersey after the match the next day. He says, well, you know, we'll see. Well, the Rowdies won that in a shootout, 5-4. And he's running off the field. I keep calling to him. He doesn't hear me, and he runs into the tunnel. And then I tried to see him after the game. He saw me at the gate. He says, oh, yeah, the equipment guy already has all the stuff packed away. I can't get it. But here, give me your address. I'll mail it to you. Well, he didn't mail it to me. So the next May, when they came to play, I saw him again. And he says, at a signing, he says, hey, you look familiar. I said, yeah, I met you last year. He says, that's right. You were at the practice. I said, yeah. He says, oh, it's good to see you. I said, yeah, that jersey never came. The package never came. And he stopped signing. He looked at me and says, it never came? I said, no. He says, okay, look, tomorrow after the game, you find me. I'm going to give you the jersey, okay? Come and find me after the game. I said, okay, great. The Rowdies won 2-1. It was a hard-fought game, 2 send-offs. Like they played a full hour, just 10-on-10. But Cosmos lost another tough one in Tampa. And here comes Canaglia running off the field, and I'm over there, and I'm like, Yeah, Mr. Kenaya, Mr. Kenaya. And he looks, he sees me, he looks away, then he stops. He sees me again, comes up to me, takes the jersey right off his back and hands it right to me, and then runs down the tunnel.
Right on.
So I've got the jersey. I got a profile pic of me with Giorgio Canaglia on my Facebook page. So Coach G and Mike, you guys can go hunting for it. It's there. And then also there's a picture of the jersey that he gave me as well. And if you dig even deeper, they had this thing called the Facebook note, where I actually gave a whole lot more detail about the events. And I read it today, and I'm like, man, was I a stalker or what? But, you know, when you're in high school and you got, you know, your favorite player, you don't see it as stalking. But nowadays people would say, yeah, there's stalking rules, get the order of protection, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, that's my second game, meeting Giorgio Canaglia and getting his jersey.
All right. G, I'll let you off the hook. Go for it.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep this one for next round. Hopefully no one will pick that game up. But this game, I actually got pretty lucky. It's 2015. Watford versus Leicester City. I think it was the semifinals for the FA Cup. And I think it was second leg. Leicester was up 1-0 going to Watford. And Watford was down, or I think it was tied 2-2 or something like that. The 90th minute, Watford is on the defense. Leicester City's in the box. They get a foul. So Leicester has a PK. It's 2-2. More or less, they're going to score. They're going to win the game. They're going to move on to the finals. I think they're playing Chelsea that year. Almunia, I think, was the goalie at the time. I think he saved the PK on a rebound shot. Saved that. Then they go on a 100-yard sprint down the other side to the Leicester City's goal. Goalie makes a good save. Ball bounces sweetly to Deeney, and he just drills it in the back of the net. You see that the onion bag just, you know, poof in the back of it. You see the crowd is just going berserk. It was one of those holy crap kind of plays and like kind of like moment games. I don't know how many games I've seen in my whole entire life. So a lot of these games that I'll be talking about today is a lot of moment games, like little special things that really set these games apart. But like, what a mindset going from, holy crap, we're about to lose this game. We're out of the FA Cup, and we know how special the FA Cup's in England, to, you know, 2 seconds later, you know, the 92nd minute, just going down and just scoring a goal. My biggest thing is I always love watching the fans' expression when they're celebrating, seeing how the team responds. And you just see the team going into the stands. It was like pandemonium. Like, they're on the field and then cheering. And once in a while, like NBCSN or Sky Sports might have a replay of it. So it was one of those kind of famous goals, infamous goals, you want to say, in the FA Cup. But I definitely got lucky just to kind of put it on and start watching Watford Leicester.
Gee, I think that was a championship game to get promoted to the Premier League. I think that was the semifinals to go to Wembley for the promotion game. I think that's what that was.
Yeah.
Zola's
going crazy.
Yeah, because that was my game. I was going to pick that game.
Yeah, that game is so good.
But definitely just that last 2 minutes of that game. And that game was going back and forth the entire time. Mm-hmm. But just that, you know, me, especially being a goalie, just to save it, like, holy crap, I saved it to a minute later, we just won the whole game. Like, mm-hmm. for a goalie, I would be jumping up and down, giving high fives, kissing everyone. But just one of those moments. But, yeah, it was a cool game. It was definitely one of those rememberable games.
And if I remember correctly, that was a real ticky-tack penalty they gave Leicester, too. They didn't really deserve that penalty in the first place.
Yeah, the Leicester guy winked at him as he was getting off the ground. Like, it was a lucky call. But, yeah, it was a BS call. The guy barely touched him. But, yeah, it was a good play, though. The whole game, that whole back and forth was awesome.
Great game.
All right, Sted.
All right, I'm going to go back to 1998 CONCACAF Gold Cup semifinals, United States versus Brazil. And we see what I still consider to be the greatest performance by a U.S. goalie in a competitive match of Casey Keller, where he basically was able to make Brazil look like they kicked the ball directly at him for the entire game. You had a critical miss by Flavio late in the game, but I'm sure we all remember the play where Romario gets a little separation between, I believe it's Eddie Pope, and he puts a header in, and Keller just dives out of nowhere and seems to make a save from a point-blank header. And Romario stands there, throws his arms up in the air, and just shakes Casey Keller's hand. And that was great because that was at a time where I think hopes for U.S. soccer were at an all-time high. We were coming off of the even though it was bad, we had a domestic league that looked like it was going to hopefully stick around for a while. You had a U.S. team that was pretty stacked, and a team that also had previously beaten Argentina 3-0 in the Copa America. So you had quality, you had talent, and before Steve Sampson and John Harkes decided to implode the team with their actions, it actually looked like the U.S. team could make some noise in the 98 World Cup. And I think a lot of it was built off of this performance against Brazil and the CONCACAF Gold Cup, where you had Joe Max Moore score an 88th-minute winner that's a different game. You had a Preki score a 65-minute winner with a great shot on the near post that he had to pit that ball through the pin of a needle to score that goal. And I remember that game because this was at a time when you did not get soccer on regular old college accessible cable TV. I was living in a very cheap apartment in Greenville, North Carolina, and we're actually able to see a game on television during the day that was soccer. So I was very excited to sit down and watch it, and I was amazed by how well they had played. And I was really hoping, really hopeful for the World Cup, that they would actually be worthwhile, because this was a winter tournament. It took place in February, but I remember that one game. In fact, Romario gave an interview about that game not that long ago, where he said that's still one of the greatest performances he's ever seen by a goalkeeper. So shout out to Casey Keller, and shout out to, when probably U.S. could have hit their peak if they hadn't have shot themselves in their own foot.
I am going to go to the World Cup of 2010 for my next one. 12 June 2010, England won, USA won. I was still living up in Philly at the time, and the general manager of Fidel, where I would go and watch games, told me a couple of weeks before that they had gotten a permit to shut down the entire block of Locust Street in between 15th and 16th Street. I immediately called out work and decided I was going to that game. To this day, there are still videos on YouTube of me at that game. But there had to be 6,000-10,000 people out at this doggone block party. Of course, like me being me, I'm like right up in front watching this thing. A bunch of my friends were there who are also big Manchester United fans, but they were all wearing like Man United jerseys and England jerseys. And I just remember going there with my friend. I'm riding over, and I've got my whole entire USA getup on. I've got my jersey, I've got my camouflage boonie cap, my blue short socks pulled up to my knees, and a do-rag, and I'm trying to tie this bandana around my neck on the subway, and the polite old white lady behind me, like, politely holds up my do-rag so I can tie it around. I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. At halftime, a buddy of mine, Mariba, who goes about 6'3", 300 pounds, he literally looks like an elephant when he walks, comes, and all the USA fans don't realize that I'm friends with these guys. So he's walking, and he's carrying about, like, 6 beers in his hands. And he walks by me, and I just reach over and grab one. And he stops, and he acknowledges me, and all the other guys around me are like, you just stole one of his beers? It's like, yeah, and what? I remember the game ends with me. It's like 6 o'clock at night, and they're cleaning up. They've taken down all the concrete barriers. They've broken down the TV. The police are coming in to swap. And it's an argument between me and 6 English guys on the street. We've all had quite a few. And I'm arguing with them, and the only thing I can come up with at the minute was, well, when was the last time you guys beat us in anything that mattered? The War of 1812? I said, well, there's only one thing that we can all agree on. We don't like the Germans. So we start singing, there were 10 German bombers in the air. The 6 of us standing out on the sidewalk in Philly, beers in hand, singing at the top of our lungs. There were 10 German bombers in the air. And the police sit right in the street waiting for us to step 1 foot off the curb, because we stumbled 1 foot off the curb. They were arresting the whole entire lot of us. We got through all 10 of those verses. I will always remember that. That was spectacular. Like I said, nice. There is still video graphic evidence on YouTube. If you look up like Fideau World Cup Block Party 2010, you'll find me in all of those videos, because a couple of days later I went in and I said, well, this is what I did. I know there are some videos up there. And then everyone I'm looking at, there I am. Yeah, I did that. That happened. Yep, that was me. So, all right.
We've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there. We've all done that. All right, Los, give us your next one.
My next one. Let's see. Okay, moving chronologically. We're in 1982. And, Mike, you said something about a 3-3 game that was a rather good game as Spain and Portugal. Well, I got one that tops your 3-3. It's a West Germany, France 3-3 semifinal.
Wow.
Tied after extra time. They're tied and have to go to penalty kicks. And one of the things about this that really irked me about this whole game and watching it was the fact that Harald Schumacher took out Patrick Batistón, took out two teeth, cracked three ribs, damaged his vertebrae, and there was no foul call, not even a card, you know, let alone a card. But Schumacher, to this day, doesn't remember it. He only sees it in highlights because he says he was so coked up, he doesn't remember anything that happened in that game. But one of the most memorable things about that was France was up 3-1 in extra time, and I'm like, okay, it looks like they've got this. And then Germany came back. It was Klaus Fischer with a bicycle kick to tie it up at 3-3 and then take it to penalty kicks. And the whole time they're taking penalty kicks, I'm like, please, please don't let Germany win, because they don't deserve to win, because Schumacher took that guy out. Should have been a foul, should have been a red card, should have been a free kick at the top of the box. If not in the box, I couldn't really tell. It's so close. But that game just stuck with me. And that bicycle kick was just like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's a good thing I had a good sphincter control, because I think I might have had to change my drawers after seeing that kick. It was amazing.
All right. Go ahead, Stead. Give us yours.
Okay. I'm going to I think I'm going to double up here simply because there's always sort of the same thing here. I'm going to go with some of my most memorable feelings of anguish and how much I hate the team I support. We'll start with the 2006 final. And Jens Lehmann coming out of goal in the 18th minute and gave a horrible dive for no reason at all outside of the box at Samuel Eto'o and ends up getting red carded. And now Arsenal has to play a man down for 70 minutes against probably one of the deepest teams that the UEFA Champions League final has ever seen. And what makes it even worse is in the 37th minute, knocks in a header, and Arsenal goes up 1-0, even playing down a man. And what made this game particularly important for me was, especially because those games at the time were played on Wednesday, and the games were kicking off at 2:45. And so, as a sixth grade teacher, I had a very, very nice classroom with a very large projection screen, and I had turned about half of my class into Arsenal fans by the time that game started. School was not over until 3:30, and I had sent emails to parents that gave students permission to stay in my classroom to watch the game as long as they liked. At kickoff, I had 65 sixth, seventh, and eighth graders in my room to watch this game. I even had permission from the principal to do this. So as I was cheering and as I was getting everybody hyped up for this game and how much fun we're going to having to see Jens Lehmann get knocked out, at that point, half the kids got up and left after that happened. And then Sol Campbell scores a header. I'm getting happy because I'm like, oh, maybe they can just stack the box and they'll win, but not, you know, knowing that they're playing against Samuel Eto'o and Ronaldinho, and then they bring in Henrik Larsson, who actually torches Arsenal for the rest of the game, and they basically made Thierry Henry obsolete. So that was particularly heartbreaking. By the time there was about 20 minutes left in the game, was me and one other kid whose mom worked at the school who were still sitting there actually watching. And the only time I've been more disappointed at the end of a game from that was, let's go to February 12th, 2011. Arsenal's up 4-0 against Newcastle, and Newcastle comes back in the last 18 minutes and draws the game 4-4. I hate this team, yet I still support them. The reason why, it's sad that out of all the games I've seen, these two Arsenal games are the ones that stick out most in my memory. I will not talk about another Arsenal game the rest of this show. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to wait, make Coach G wait. So I'm going to Matt next.
Okay. My number, I guess my number three, it was going to be, it's the 1998 World Cup final, France versus Brazil.
Oh, what a game.
That's a game. That's the game that actually got me started on soccer, you know, just in general. You know, Sted keeps talking about, you know, here in the U.S., we didn't have a lot of access to it unless the World Cup started coming around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, I was in a soccer camp. I was a little kid. I was in a soccer camp at Bullis, and they made such a big deal of it. We actually got to watch the game at the camp, and it just had such a huge impression on me of just, you know, all the buildup for the game. The counselors just did such a good job of, like, you know, this is Ronaldo, you know, and everyone was talking about his weird haircut at the time. And it just, everything around that. So they were just pumping up this Brazil team. And then, I guess I had this thing for underdogs. And I just kind of wanted France to win, even though it was at and maybe, you know, the tables had turned a little bit for that, but, I just, at least the way the counselors had been, you know, hyping up the game was all about Brazil. And I just, you know, here's this guy who's like this, you know, bald spotted guy, like coming up, climbing up, hitting two headers, from corners, and then France ended up walking away with it, winning I think 3-0, and that just, from that moment on, I was just like, soccer is definitely going to be a sport that I'm going to take with me to the end, I guess. So huge impact on me.
The thing about that game too that I always found funny was at the very end of that game, France was clearly going to win that game, and for some reason, Marcel Desailly decides to make some horrible run up the field and gets a second yellow card and gets knocked out of the game.
Exactly.
That's the funniest thing. It's, I remember watching that going, crazy. What are you doing? You guys won this game 20 minutes ago.
Why are you doing this? Exactly, yeah.
All right, crazy, G, you're up.
Well, Mike, you kind of scared me on yours. I ain't going to lie. So mine third game is the 2010 World Cup United States versus Algeria game. This is the infamous Landon Donovan scoring the 91st minute, something like that, where I think this is the third game of the group. I think D, don't quote me on that. And United States had to win against the
– Yeah, it was the third game. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I think then they had to win to move on, or get the second place in the group. And, you know, a tie, I think both of them would have been knocked out or something like that.
On.
But, you know, United States had to win.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those very high moments of me actually enjoying watching U.S. soccer was this World Cup. But, yeah, it was definitely one of those, you know, we need a goal. And I was a huge Dempsey fan. He shot and, you know, their goalie saves, and here comes Donovan at the right place, right time, just puts that ball in that lower left-hand corner. And, you know, everyone is cheering in the bar. You know, drinks are being spilled all over the place, watching TV, and the American team is going bonkers. But it was a great game to move on to, the 16. I think that was the last time we've ever been to the 16. But that team, in my eyes, had a lot of potential. Altidore was the next, you know, kind of big thing coming up, but he obviously didn't pan out. But yeah, that was one of my favorite teams, and with Bradley and stuff, and Howard and everything. But that team for me, for all the USA games that I can clearly remember, that was the one that really sticks out. Just, you know, Donovan just putting the team on his shoulders at the very end of the game.
The game before that against Slovenia, when they did draw. Not one of my most memorable games. It's one of my most memorable afternoons, though, because that was when I found out just how much fun you can have on a street corner in Philadelphia with a table full of Bud Light and a Vuvuzela.
I can't imagine.
We were on 15th Street, and a guy comes down, and I had borrowed the Vuvuzela from somebody. We're taking pictures. We're making up random chants. I swear, there was a guy who looked like Matthew McConaughey. It might actually been Matthew McConaughey who started showing up, making up random chants for people walking by, like, deliver that mail. We had a blast. Guy comes down. He was like, I was in 18th Street. I heard Vuvuzela. I wanted to see if we won. I said, nah, we drew. Could you imagine what we'd be doing right now if we actually won? My number three is David Beckham's first start in MLS against the Red Bulls in 2007, August 18th. A buddy got tickets, and we went and we sat in the upper deck of Giant Stadium. And it was a great game. Defense was optional. The New York Red Bulls won 5-4. I remember because, I went out with a bunch of friends. I had told them before the game, I said, I'm going to pick up a sixer full of beer. Or I'm going to pick up a 12 or a beer. So we get there, and one of the greatest lines that I've ever heard, they're barbecuing. And it's me and a bunch of Dominicans and Puerto Ricans. And they go, and they've got some steak on the grill, and they turn around and they say, okay, we got to cut the steak. And anybody got a knife? And everybody's like, no. My buddy turns around without missing a beat. All these freaking Puerto Ricans and Dominicans, ain't nobody got a knife. Ain't nobody got a box cutter. So we're running low on beer. And so I walk across with my buddy's brother-in-law to go grab that case out of my car. And I come back, and there's these guys that I can only assume are Argentinian because they're wearing Argentinian soccer jerseys playing soccer. And they ask me where I got the beer from. I'm like, I got a beer out my car. I'm like, can I have one? I'm like, nah, I don't know you. Dude's like, I'll give you $50 for the 12er right now. I'm like, sold.
Yep.
So we get back, and the guys are like, where's the beer? I said, about that. And we tell them what happened. And they're like, nah, I can't even be mad. That's straight up capitalism right there. Dude had a Napoleon.
Man.
Dude had a Napoleon Dynamite wig in the back of his car. So I used to shave my head at the time. I was bald. And as a joke, I put the wig on and I started taking pictures with it. And I decided I was going to wear the wig into the game. So there's a great picture on me on Facebook. I've got the wig, and I've got a Montreal Expos hat, like, perched on the corner of the wig, right? The wig and the hat don't fit. Anyway, every time the Red Bulls score, I take the wig off, and I wave it around. The wig is cheap as all get out, right? There's, like, loose hair floating down through the things, through the stands. At halftime, I get up, and I said, I'm going to go and beat the beer rush to get a beer at halftime. At that moment, the Red Bull scores. So I wave the wig and I walk out, get a beer at halftime, come back in. Everybody in the stands is like, that's not your hair. That was a wig.
Come on.
I take off my hat and they're like, oh, you're bald? Then somebody was like, he looks just like Thierry Henry. I'm like, whatever. The greatest quote was, we're all booing. David Beckham comes down to get a corner kick. We're all booing him mercilessly, and the guy turns around to us, and he looks, and he's like six rows in front of me. He turns around, he says, why the are y'all booing? He's the reason y'all idiots are up here. So that one will always stick with me. All right.
Proud moments. Proud moments.
Yes, proud moments. Ned, you're up.
Love it. Love
all
it.
Right. My next one is going to be a game that I actually watched on accident one morning. I think when we finally were able to get consistent Premier League play, I was just happy to just turn on and watch any game I could. And in doing this, I was like, oh, what games do I really remember watching? Because while I was thinking of all these games I knew of, I can't say that I actually watched them live when they occurred. But I can say I watched this one. And this is Tottenham versus Wigan, 9-1. Jermaine Defoe scores 5. And I remember watching this game in particularly the reason why I recall it so much was after the game, the owner of Wigan refunded every Wigan fan that went down to White Hart Lane to watch this game. And so, you know, and ever since then, I had a real soft spot in my heart for Wigan. And so it was great also to, after this, you know, complete teardown that they had. I believe a couple seasons later, Wigan gets one of the best games I've ever seen in the FA Cup final by beating Manchester City 1-0 to win an FA Cup in the same season that they got relegated. So, but that was the game that kind of exposed me, like, wow, there's some real levels of this in the Premier League. And, you know, and the funny thing was, this particular season, Wigan wasn't even in the bottom three. I believe they finished 15th this season. So it was quite striking. But that was probably Jermaine Defoe's highlight of his career, was putting in 5 in one game.
All right. Matt, go for it.
All right. Number two wasn't even, like, that great of a game. It just was – it just was a huge – like, I don't want to say impact, but just, like, a big deal for me. This is, again, back in the days where, you know, soccer channels were just starting to come out in the U.S., but my parents had no idea about soccer. Sted knows my parents. My parents had no idea about soccer. And, you know, I'm a kid in high school and, like, a freshman. And I had been, you know, saving up my allowance all the time. And at the only way for me to be able to watch a game live was to get it on pay-per-view. You had to pay, like, $20. And, you know, get up at the crack of dawn or whatever and you know, watch them. So my, you know, live, well, not my first ever live United game, but the game that I spent money on, and like, it was just such a big deal to me, because, you know, it was my game, I guess. It was Manchester United 1-0. Chelsea were the best team in the Premier League at that time. They were on this unbeaten run, and Darren Fletcher hits this just dinky, like, header from a really nice cross from Ronaldo that just loops over Cech, and then Terry's at the post. He tries to head it out, and he can't. And just that whole game of just, you know, to the satisfaction of, you know, me being a United fan, you know, paying the money to, like, watch them play, and then them actually winning, when, again, they weren't their best. Well, they're, you know, they were better then than they are now, even. But back then, in terms of the scale of things, United really wasn't that as good as they had been. And just to watch that game, just being so nervous, I remember, you know, thinking, I spent $20 on this game. Like, United better not cough up an equalizer or whatever. Just everything about that game, all the emotions, like, tied to it, just because you had money, like, technically money on the game and hoping they would win, and you justifying you paying, you know, $20 at that time for it. It was just awesome. It was an awesome experience, all 90 minutes of it. So, number two for me.
We got to pick up the pace. So give me your last one while you're at it, Matt.
Sure, absolutely. 2017, I'm in Spain. I'm actually in Barcelona at the time, and I got to watch live at the Nou Camp the Super Cup final, the first leg, where Ronaldo had that far post, like, upper 90, just blast. I was in the stadium live for that. So I saw El Clasico live with Ronaldo and Messi on the same field. It was pretty fantastic. Yeah.
All right. Los, we got to get give us your last two.
All right. In 1986, the World Cup final, Argentina 3, West Germany 2. Maradona did not score because he couldn't use his hands in that game. But Argentina was up 1-0 at the half, up 2-0 with 30 minutes left, and Rummenigge and Buller score 2 goals and make it 2-2 with at the end of well, close to the end of regulation. It was like 81st minute when Buller scored, and the last goal by Argentina was scored by number 7 Jorge Burruchaga, which probably doesn't mean anything to you guys, but we were watching the broadcast on the Spanish channel, and every time that Burruchaga scored, it was a special way of calling the goal by Andres Cantor. And he would say, "Gol de Burruchaga." And to hear that in the final was just like, oh, this is the way to finish this tournament. It was absolutely an amazing call. And, of course, my number 5 goes back to our 2019, all of last year. The UEFA Champions League semifinal leg number 2, where Tottenham beat Ajax 3-2. But, of course, we lost the first leg 1-0 at home, which is typical. We always go down 1-0. And then we were losing 2-0 at the half. So 3-0 aggregate. We needed three goals. And so we ended up getting the three goals with a Lucas Moura hat trick in the second half that still has me with goosebumps because that third goal, we're just, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? And then it happened. You're like, no. This isn't real. This is a dream, right? And you're pinching yourself, and you're like, oh, this is real. Holy cow, he scored that third goal. I can't believe it. And what an amazing, euphoric event. And then ever since then, it's just been one big letdown.
All right.
I was about to say, how times have changed.
Welcome to Arsenal.
Yeah, welcome to our side.
Gee, give
we got
your
Jose
last two
now,
real
so
quick.
That should make it better, right? Right?
Yeah, my last two, they're both from the Azzurri versus France and versus Uruguay. 2006, 2014, my team, the Azzurri, were victims of the headbutt and the bite. Both World Cup games, and why these truly stand out for me, because playing soccer my whole entire life, I have never, ever seen anything like this, especially at a World Cup level, just because these are gentlemen, you're professionals, you have the number one tournament of the summertime, and, 2006, it's flat out just, headbutt Materazzi. And after that, all the, I guess, memes nowadays, but, all the Facebook, jokes and stuff like that, even with, I call them horse mouth, but Suarez and Chiellini, a lot of memes, but just seem like they're just odd, weird things that you really never see. But these two things, especially, watching the World Cup and the Azzurri, the Italian teams, just the bites, he did it again, I think, with, was it Barcelona or was it with Liverpool that he bit another person? So this is a habitual thing with Suarez, but both times Italy was the victim. So one time we did win the World Cup in 2006, and in 2014 we actually came in third in the group play. We had to win that game versus Uruguay, but I think the bite took a little bite out of us, if you want to say.
All right. Say,
well,
you're
up. Suarez really was keen on Chiellini because he heard it was a good dish, but then
All right, Stead, you're up.
I wanted to pick a World Cup game because I hadn't picked a World Cup game yet. So I had it down to between two. My first one was going – originally I was going to go with Spain versus Nigeria in the 98 World Cup. Nigeria's player Sunday Oliseh hits a screamer to win. That was just kind of a sketchy game because I think the goalie, I think it was Zubizarreta. I don't know. He seemed like he – I know he wasn't good with the ball at his feet, but he pushed the ball in the net to kind of give Nigeria a goal. That game was always fishy to me. But I'm going to go with – Sweden versus Senegal in 02 Japan. This was a game in the round of 16 game to go to the quarterfinals. Of course, we haven't seen an African team get beyond the quarterfinals. But you had Henri Camara score a goal in the 104th minute to win the game because that was the last time, I believe, that a golden goal was actually awarded to win a game in a World Cup. Bring back golden goal. It's the best way to do overtime in football. Bring back golden goal.
They won't do it. It's too American.
It's awful.
Yeah.
I love it. I wish they had it. I love a golden goal. It's
so much
better than
anything else. That's the best overtime I've ever seen in a World Cup match was Sweden-Senegal. Go watch it. It was great. Sweden had so many chances to score, too. It's a great, great game. Golden goal. The excitement on the field. You felt the energy. Bring back golden goal.
So for my number two, I'm going to go to August 7th of 2008, a friendly at Yankee Stadium again. New York Red Bulls 2, Barcelona 6. Not a great game by any stretch of the imagination, preseason friendly, but in that game I watched live, I got to see Dani Alves, Gerard Piqué, Rafa Márquez, Carlos Puyol, Eric Abidal, Sergio Busquets, Yaya Toure, Xavi Hernandez, Samuel Eto'o, and Thierry Henry all play live. All right,
wow.
So probably one of the greatest collections of talent that I've ever seen play on one team. I remember that's when I knew that Samuel Eto'o was on his way out because he refused to sign Barcelona jerseys. He would only sign Ivory Coast jerseys. Or he would only sign Cameroon jerseys, right? And every time he would throw – somebody, one of the fans would throw a Barca jersey at him, he'd throw it back. But he would sign all the Cameroon jerseys. And my number one, I got to go with the Champions League final in 2008. Manchester United beats Chelsea on penalties. I can remember that whole entire day. Chelsea, Mike Shustak, and Large Nigerian, both of whom have been on this show. We've been watching games the whole entire season. We decide that we're going to go down to the bar. It was back when there was a podcast on Sirius Satellite Radio, World Soccer Daily, right? They were doing a live broadcast. I got to hang out with those guys. I can remember every emotion. I didn't watch penalties from out in the bar. I stepped outside the bar, and after Ronaldo missed, I walked outside the bar. I said, I just don't want to be in here when they lose. And then John Terry steps up, and that infamous miss, and I go running into the bar. I'm standing in front of the TV when they put the one away and Eddie Van der Sar gets the save, and we just go wild. I couldn't walk 3 feet without getting a shot. I just remember a Northern Irish guy who bore a striking resemblance to Cristiano Ronaldo. And I was talking to him. I'm like, you look like Cristiano Ronaldo. And he says, I get that all the time. And he had this weird Northern Irish accent. I'm like, I was not expecting that to come out of you. Of course, the next year I had to go back and suffer through them losing. And I had to do that again in 2011. But I will always remember watching that game. That's got to be the most memorable and one of the most agonizing times. But that's one of those times where it's like, this is why I watch that sport, just for those emotions. All right, gentlemen, we are up against it. We somehow managed to time that just about perfectly. Thanks a lot. Parting shots as we go out the door. Coach Matt, final word.
Not much, so thanks for having me on. It's been a while, so I appreciate it and enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Coach G, how you doing?
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed this Sunday. I put on ESPN2 to hopefully watch some more of the Ocho, but when I put it on, I think it was women's basketball or something like that. So for the millions and millions of millions, or maybe the five people that listen to the show, it has connections to ESPN. Can you please pass the message along? Can you please put back the Ocho? That was her awesome on a Sunday. So besides that, it's always good to be on the show, guys.
Los.
Hey, so I saw a replay, Man City versus Liverpool over the weekend from, I think, 2017. Sadio Mane, red card in the 37th minute because he put a cleat in the goalkeeper's face. And there was like, oh, well, he was meaning to play the ball. I'm sorry, you cannot put a cleat in the guy's face. He had to go. It was still a good red card years later.
All right.
That's it. That's what I got.
All right. Thanks a lot, Los. As always, I want to give a big shout-out to producer Paul for keeping the trains running on time, and our sponsor, as always, Flanagan's Hearth and Fiddle, Maryland's best Irish takeout. 4844 Cordell Avenue. Go down there and get dinner. Open up 3 o'clock daily. All right, Stead, it's been real. What you
Absolutely.
Got for me as we head for the door?
If you're dying to watch any soccer at all, EA Sports is simulating MLS matches on the MLS website. So if you're dying for a good soccer match, go ahead and check out our eSports athletes.
Quarantine.
That's
the final word,
my friend.
Quarantine. All right, for Coach Matt, Coach G, Los, Stead, producer Paul, I'm Mike. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We did all right this week. We'll try and do better next week. Thanks a lot. Have a good week.